sitting in front of the bulldozer. We've been standing in front of them for 3 hours, and they knew that we weren't moving out of the way. We were climbing up and trying to stay in front of them to try and protect the land. The Israelis here are trying to destroy trees and homes. Thousands of Palestinians are killed. This is one international. One international has been killed, but thousands of Israeli Palestinians have been killed. They shoot at children. They kill people the whole time. The only reason we can do what we do is because they're Palestinians.
As medically, the direct cause of death here is the suffocation as a result of dumping a large amount of soil over the American victim, Richard Corey. And there is, and the other causes as a fracture of ribs and fracture of clavicle leading to emphysema in the chest. But the main cause is the suffocation.
Not one of us is planning to leave. We will all continue doing the same work that we were doing. We only hope that this incident makes the Israelis more cautious and makes our work more effective so that they know that we will not move. I feel very, very upset. I am in shock. I've never had someone this close to me die before. It makes me very angry that they would do this to my friend. And it makes me very scared of what they will do to us and others in the future. I now feel the same way that almost every single Palestinian family must feel. I want to stress that this is one American out of the thousands of Palestinians that have been killed by the occupation.
As I look at what Rachel and the rest of the volunteers, if I am here, were doing, while they were in front day after day, sometimes twice a day, in a very dangerous, and I call it a combat situation, even though that combat is taking place in neighborhoods, people's houses, or the orchards. In the midst of all that danger, I would have said up until January of this year that I had never met anyone with enough courage to go back to that day after day, armed with a bullhorn and pink fluorescent vest and their convictions. But of course I had. She was my daughter.
It was upsetting to us at first that the versions of the stories were so different, because we had talked to eyewitnesses who said that the bulldozer went over Rachel and then backed up over her again. And the report, at least the first report that came out from the Israeli government, said that that the bulldozer had never touched her.
A group of activists from the International Solidarity Movement were protesting and demonstrating against the destruction wrought by Israeli bulldozers along the borderline. We regularly place ourselves in between bulldozers and homes. On this occasion, an American citizen, Rachel Corey, kneeled down in front of a bulldozer. The driver could clearly see where she was, that she was unarmed, that she was an international from 10 meters away. He had time to react. He started driving towards her. The pile of earth in front of the bulldozer blade started to come over Rachel, and she tried to stand up. She tried to get away. Everybody who was there, who could see the bulldozer driver, motioned what was going on. They shouted through a megaphone. We said that there was someone there. We pointed to the bottom of the blade. We were telling him there was someone there. He kept on going. He dragged Rachel under the earth, under the bulldozer blade, underneath the bulldozer, and waited over her body for a few seconds before withdrawing.
מי אשם במותה של רייצ'ל קורי? ראשית, אני חייב לומר שיש בי כאב וצער על האובדן הזה, אובדן של חיים. ובכלל, כל אובדן חיים של אזרחים הוא דבר שאנחנו, ואני אישית, לוקחים אותו באופן קשה ביותר.
אתה יכול לקבוע שזה היה מוות מיותר?
חד משמעית, זה היה מוות מיותר.
To exonerate someone of something, I can't exonerate myself of something I've done. Somebody else has to find me free of guilt. So if it strikes me that if the Israeli government believes the report that they're putting out, then they should be very happy to have somebody independent, like the American government or some other independent agency, come in and do their own investigation and come presumably those same findings, and then they can truly be exonerated of whatever happened, and we can be satisfied that we know the truth there.
She was seen, she was visible. The driver knew what he was doing. And in spite of what the Israelis have tried to say, that it was an accident and that you know, no one's responsible for it, I think that they have not investigated seriously, and that it would be good if the Americans themselves pressed for a proper investigation.
לא עבר הרבה זמן, אולי רבע שעה, יצאו מלפנינו כמה אנשים.
איזה אנשים?
זרים.
היה להם
היה, אבל היה כתוב באנגלית, אני לא הבנתי מה היה כתוב שם. הבנתי שזה מפגינים.
הם מגפון?
כן.
There were two people in the bulldozer driving, and I'm sure they saw her. The photos show that they could see her. The idea of having two people in one bulldozer is to have a better range for seeing. And the bulldozer driver actually said to the camera that when you don't get an order to stop and you're a soldier, you just don't stop. He didn't say he didn't see her.
אנחנו במילואים, אנחנו קודם כל חיילים. עד שלא אומרים לנו לעצור, אני לא יכול לעצור עבודה.
He just said he didn't get an order to stop, so he ran her over. I think he's guilty in murder, and I think his commander is guilty in murder.
There are Americans who have said, heaven help them. She got what she asked for. Shameless, because it involves Israel. But let me step away from Rachel Corrie, a martyr, a heroine, somebody that should be respected and admired by all, and the persons who did it, the Israelis, who claim it was an accident. Anyone who's ever seen the video knows it was no accident. It was done on purpose. I mean, you drive a bulldozer over someone, it isn't an accident. But the United States government, which had a major, major press crisis when a Chinese woman was arrested by the Chinese government and held in jail for a while. Even the President of the United States talked about it. And when she returned, when she was released and returned, an American senator met her at the airport. This Chinese woman was not an American citizen. She was a legally resident alien. Shortly after that, an Ethiopian, also not an American citizen, but an American resident, was taken by the Ethiopian government, which tremendous public relations media flap developed. For decades, the government of Israel has arrested American citizens and held them in jail, sometimes without charges, often for protracted periods of time, and on some occasions in which torture was alleged in sworn statements. The American government has never said a public word about that. When one of the organizations got four of these young Palestinian American citizens to appear on CNN to tell their story, and they did, it was a 7-minute segment, which in television is a lifetime. That segment can no longer be found in the CNN archives. It never happened. Do you understand? It never happened.
They broke into my house. They distributed themselves all over the place. I told them I was American. They said, shut up and sit down. I said, look, this is my house. I got my passport. I said, I'm an American. You can't do this. This is my house. And you know what he said? He said, this is no worse than what your country is doing in Afghanistan. I'm like, what? What gives the right to anyone, anyone, I don't care who it is and what the reasons are, to walk in someone's house? I still had my robe on. I'm in my nightgown. They come in my house, they take over everything, they break things, they urinate on the floor. And they just, you can't talk to them. So being an American, at least in this part of the world, is no privilege at all. Israel hates everybody equally.
It's unfortunate that Israeli soldiers are acting arrogantly with the arrogance of power. Their machine guns, tanks, against journalists, whether local or foreign, against peace activists, whether local or foreign, against supporters of human rights, whether local or foreign, against United Nations employees, whether local or foreign. Until now, they have killed tens of them. Look at this American peace activist that was smashed by a caterpillar bulldozer used by the Israeli soldiers in Gaza. This is a crime. And all the witnesses said that she was trying to stop them, stole, and they crushed her with the bulldozer. Sorry is not an excuse or a forgiveness. These are crimes, and those who committed these crimes must go to court.
Our sympathies in many ways had been with Israel. I think the sympathy of the U.S., you know, government is with Israel, and we really went along with that. I would read the kids' stories when they were small about the Holocaust, you know, and so Rachel heard those stories of children, you know, who survived and so forth. And
I don't think we understood, I'm sure we didn't understand, the extent to which the occupation is an ongoing piece of violence against the Palestinian people. And I know I also didn't understand just how violent it could be, or is here. I think maybe in some sense it could be, but it's kind of constant basis until I heard from my daughter what she wrote.
With the fact that the Israeli military didn't take responsibility for their actions, and that the international community really didn't mobilize to hold Israel responsible, only a couple of weeks later, another international volunteer, 24-year-old Brian Avery from the United States, was shot with a high-caliber bullet in the face while he was in the occupied West Bank town of Jenin. Only 6 days after Brian Avery was shot in the face, 21-year-old Tom Herndahl, a British national, was shot in the back of the head. Palestinians and international civilians were trying to erect a protest tent to dissuade the Israeli military from opening live fire on a gathering of internationals and Palestinians. As they were going to do this, Israeli forces opened fire from a watchtower, at which time it became too dangerous to stay in the area. Tom noticed Palestinian children in the area. Most of them ran away as soon as the Israeli military opened fire, but three had become frightened and paralyzed from their fear. Tom went over to a group, to two young boys, and moved them out of the line of Israeli fire into safety. And then he saw a little girl who was also paralyzed from fear and was in a very dangerous position. And he went over to her. And as he was bending down to take her hand, he was hit in the back of the head with a live bullet.
So, a group from the International Solidarity Movement was in Rafah, in the Yibna area. We had come to the area to do an action, to do some human shield work, but when we realised that there was a lot of heavy shooting, we decided to pull back and move to an area which was out of danger. Tom saw that in an area which the soldiers were shooting into, there were women and children standing around. He walked to the area and he was motioning for them to come back to try and maybe get them out of danger. I saw him kind of, while he was standing up, he kind of shook. I saw blood around his neck. He fell to the ground.
And I suppose we're quite disappointed because we would very much like to meet with the IDF. But as yet, we haven't had the opportunity to do so. We do hope there will be an opportunity to meet with them where we can have open discussion and honest answers. We don't come to criticise. We simply come to find the truth. I mean, Tom was first and foremost a humanitarian. He wasn't necessarily politically minded, although he was very interested in working out, you know, in developing his interest in politics. You know, that was happening at the same time. But first and foremost, he'd come out here to help. And that was Tom. And I can just imagine him just reaching out to children. He's got a younger brother, Freddie, and he was always very kind and very protective with Freddie. And it would have been so natural for Tom just to reach out for these two children and see them to safety. I mean, that is absolutely Tom. It's a very poor place. Life looks extremely hard. I don't know how they live hearing gunshots daily. They have got used to it. Have they got used to it? Surely they haven't got used to it. It's become a way of life. That's just unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable way to live life. And I can imagine Tom thinking exactly the same, only more strongly.
They knew what they were doing. He was clearly marked. He was wearing a vest like I'm wearing. He was, you know, he was with a group of internationals. They knew we were there. They knew what we were doing. And still, they decided that they would shoot him. We've also become convinced here that there's a direct connection between him being shot and what the Israelis did the following week. That there was an invasion, of a very large invasion into Rafah. 60 tanks, bulldozers and APCs came into that area of Rafah, the Yibna area, a week later. And we believe that if we had been able to carry out our plan the day that Tom was shot, to put a tent up in the area of Yibna, which would have made it more difficult for tanks to roll into the streets of Yibna, they would not have been able to carry out the operation.
Fields of sensation.